Carlos, you can say many things about him, including his singing capabilities, but you can't deny anything that he has to say about.
I was just about to say.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, to this. Just go ahead and head to YouTube and
Google.
Type in,
Google.
Type in
YouTube, yeah.
Carl Lewis, was it the National,
Carl Lewis national anthem. No, Stars, was it? No, it was the National Anthem.
Yeah. So.
Oh, say, can you see?
It wasn't as bad
and
as
the Rockets. What's Ray Glenn?
What's the old girl name?
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Oh, man, episode 57 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. I am Deontay Epps, alongside my brother, my friend, my guy, Dane Beasley. Dane, how are you doing this evening, my dude?
Better, man. Better. Better. Better.
Yeah.
Better.
One of those Mondays, but, you know, we always manage to get through.
Have to, man.
Gotta push forward. Gotta push forward, man. Episode 57 of the Duo. If you're listening or watching this, we thank you for your time and your, you know, lending your ears to what you're about to hear and what you've heard for the past 56 episodes. If you're still with us, rocking with us since episode one, since episode 0.5, yes, introduction, we thank you. We appreciate you so much. And taking the time out your day, your week, to just listen to two guys talk about sports and stuff. So we really appreciate it. Dane, when we first talked about the U.S. Team USA basketball, man, mm-hmm, you know, they were getting a lot of criticism. I know we criticized them as well. Yeah, they lost to Nigeria in the team exhibition, as mm-hmm, well as
France.
But they lost to France in the first game. It was another team they lost to, I believe, in the preliminary round. But hey, so what matters is they came out with the gold. Might have been Australia.
I can't remember.
Might have been Australia. But they came out with the gold. They defeated France on Friday night with the score 87-82. Of course, one of the things that we had talked about, Dane, the best player on the team for Team USA had to step up, and he hadn't to that point when we were kind of talking about if there was some trouble. Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Became Kevin Durant, what they call it. The announcer called him the entire game, was calling him Captain America. Finished with 29 points on 9 of 18 shooting. You know, I mean, what we kind of expected, mm-hmm, for Team USA to pull off the goal was him stepping up and being the best player, you know, on the team. And
right,
I mean, when he's on, obviously we know nobody can stop him.
No.
And obviously passing the record for most Olympic points in Team USA men's history, man. What do you kind of think about what Kevin Durant was able to do to pull out the goal for Team USA?
It was cool. One thing I was appreciative, I had a bit of reflection sometimes, and I have to put myself on the spot here. I think it's been a little bit too hard on these guys, man. Thinking about their season coming to a close not too long ago. Of course, several of these players battling and then coming back from season ending, possibly career ending injuries. And I think I was a little bit too harsh. I can't speak for everybody else, but I think they're a pretty, obviously it's funny to, you know, make, you know, crack your jokes here and there. But on the human side of things, I think in retrospect, it's kind of easy for me to say, you know what, man, I think I might have been going too hard on these guys. But obviously KD shut me up because I didn't think they had it in them to not only make it this far, obviously, but to win in the fashion that they did. They held it together, so I'm proud of them. Not to say I was there hoping for their demise, but I wasn't going to be surprised if they lost. But shout out to them proving everybody wrong, all the haters.
Yeah.
And it was a cool thing to watch. It was a cool thing to watch. So glad to be a part of history. Glad they were to redeem themselves. And, you know,
yeah,
it's business as usual, I guess.
During the preliminary rounds, I was listening to Bomani Jones, and he made a great point about like it Team USA is always in an interesting spot because when they win, everyone expects them to be like that, obviously. Right. But they get more attention when they lose, right? Because true. Hey, we're Team USA, we're supposed to be the best in the world. We have all the NBA All-Stars on our squad, or at least most of them. We should dominate every time.
Right.
But a great point is, and we've seen it, like over 100 of the I heard a stat, over 100, like 108.
Just make it up, bro.
NBA players are international.
Nobody's going to fact check this.
Don't fact check.
I'm calling out all the diehard duo fans. You're not going to fact check this. Go ahead.
Yes, don't fact check it.
Take it away, lies.
Most of the, a lot of the top athletes, NBA players are mm-hmm. international. We've seen like the Lucas, the Rudy Gobert's, the Patty Mills, those kind of guys that have made impact in Olympic hoops that we've seen are kind of, I wouldn't even say closing the gap, mm-hmm. but for Team USA to kind of be consistent, I think, because they kind of put this team together in like maybe 2 months or so, it'll probably right. take more of an effort, a commitment from the top players to make it, you know, a year-to-year thing. Yeah. Because, you know, it's more than just the Olympics for Team USA or international hoops in general. It's more of, you know, they have the World Championships, mm-hmm. FIBA Championships in between those Olympic years. So if they get kind of a commitment towards that, that could help out for sure.
It speaks to the level of competition in the NBA, how year to year, there's always, even though you have your top guys, you have your LeBrons, your Steps, your KDs, it fluctuates. You know, you never know who the guy is going to be each year. And for that to be the case, there has to be a level of, not only a level of competition, but just a level of the next man up type of thing. I think it's a cool thing to see, not only them stepping it up and along the lines of building that chemistry that they needed to pull it together, but I think on the NBA side of things, officiating wise, they took notice as well. And we'll see some changes mm-hmm. here in the near future and how this particular international competition, you know, we see every 4 years, how that shapes right. the way that the NBA needs to be, you know, needs to be playing. So. That's just my thoughts.
Well, the NBA had already announced that they're going to try to they've already directed the refs to start not calling the flops and the extra, you know, diving in for a shot on the foul shots and stuff like that, which they're trying to implement already in the summer league games that have started recently. Mm-hmm. But to go back to your point about the international play, I mean, you could argue like the top three, maybe four players in the NBA are international. As far as Luka, you got Giannis, the reigning MVP, the Joker, Jokic. so, it's a good argument that, right. you know, the range of what Team USA is used to dominating mm-hmm. Olympic after Olympic. I mean, they've won, what, four straight golds now?
Yeah.
For Team USA since that debacle back then. But it's not going to get any easier for them. The way that they had to, where they had to fight for this goal.
These are the L's that they showed in our face. You know what song I'm talking about?
No,
the song
which one?
Lion King 2. When old buddy got kicked out of the kingdom, or out of the pride, and they was all basically saying the little antelopes in the draft, they was all singing deception, disgrace. As he was like walking out, they was killing it though. My bad. Go ahead, man. I don't know why that randomly popped in my head.
Talking about not disgracing the country.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's right.
I saw a lot of people making fun of Team USA talking about if they lose to France, don't let them come back home. Like, bro. We would do anything for jokes, though.
Boy, it's about to get beat by some croissants.
On the women's side, man, it was
business
pretty
as
much
usual.
Domination. Business as usual. 90-75 win over Japan. Looking at the box score, I mean, I did watch it in real time, but to see these numbers are just crazy from Brittany Griner. 30 points, 14 for 18. They were literally just tossing her to her in the paint because she's a foot taller than a lot of the Japanese players. But it's fifth straight gold for the women. Incredible. Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi. I mean, that decorated Olympians, man. Taurasi, what more can you say?
When they, with the picture, or not picture, but the highlight, and it's obviously the jokes are gonna, you know, make themselves, but she's standing there with the ball in her hand, palming that mug and smiling because old girl is defending her, can't get to it. It's like, it's like literally like when you playing basketball. If anybody's out there who's, you know, I don't know, let's say you're a teacher, you get to play a student faculty basketball game against elementary school kids, you basically gonna be like Shaq. So you just standing there, like, you know, like messing with the kids. That's exactly what she was doing. Just like, hey, what's up? Hey, that's cool. That's cute. That's cute.
Somebody put it a side by side with Michael Jordan doing the same move.
Childish.
Just look at this, man. Seven straight. I said five earlier. Seven straight USA women's gold medals dating back to 1996.
Poor Australia.
They won it in 96. USA versus Brazil in 2076. To 54 over Australia,
that's a 2004 bad
over Australia, that's 2008 like over Australia.
It's like the Bills in the 90s, just 2012
over France.
Year after year.
Yeah, now that gap is not closing. That talent from the USA is, you know,
it's not even close.
Going to continue to, you know, widen. But an interesting thing, Sue Bird did kind of say that she wasn't coming back to international play. Diana Taurasi said, see you in France. I don't know if she could come back, but the interesting thing would be who she said that at the end of the game.
I got you.
I don't know if she was playing or
you
not.
As a spectator, you like saying like, oh, she ain't going to be back. Excuse me. That's my assumption was when you said that. I was like, wait a minute. You believe that? This is getting people to tune in. Come on. My bad. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say when they finally decide to
announce the team,
be a part of international play. Yeah, who will take over that leadership kind of role?
They'll find somebody
For Team USA, especially from the point guard standpoint.
Whoever she is, she might be a junior in high school right now, for all we know. Whoever it is.
Old girl from UConn, Paige Buckets. She'll be a sophomore next year.
I was telling my coworker about that, how she copyrighted her, trademarked that. And then she's like, what's her last name? And I was like, oh my gosh. I had to show her in spelling. This is her last name. And she's like, I don't get it. I was like, it's a play on words, buckets. Like, and she's like, oh, okay.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right. Staying in Olympics, track and field, man. Allyson Felix she won her 11th medal, passing Carl Lewis for the most medals by a U.S. track and field athlete. And it's a great story for her. Everything she dealt with Nike during the pregnancy and stuff like that. And the main thing that I got from that is, of course, she says she's not coming back to this is it for her for Olympic play. And going out, she says she feels at peace, basically making a statement that, you know, women can come back, because a lot of the times
they're not able to.
Women are right. Or they're seen as, you know, going through a pregnancy. They're looked down upon as like they can never be back to where they were previously. And I feel like this was like a statement for her to win medals and, you know, pass Carl Lewis. What do you think, man?
Man, listen, we don't have enough time to talk about just how despicable and how shady that was of Nike. But at the end of the day, obviously they're still going to make their money, obviously, but you got to be punching the air. If the statement, if the footnote of all this was how much your particular entity or company dropped the ball. So when she was running, I believe it was the
400.
Was it the 400 or the, I can't remember, the 400 or 200. And I was like, man, she's going to do it. Because I wasn't even thinking, I completely forgot about the 4x4. Like, I forgot about that. So she's going to tie the record. Because it was the build up to the entire Olympic Games was Allyson Felix and her legacy and her coming back. And it's like, she's going to do it. And completely forgetting the 4x4 and then seeing who was on the 4x4 with her, I was like, man, this about to get crazy.
It's a wrap.
Did you ended up watching it, right? The 4x4?
Yeah.
It impressive, breathtaking, and the most importantly, we are in good hands. We are in great hands. If this is actually her last Olympic Games, her competing in if this is her last time competing in the Olympic Games, we are in good hands. But
yeah,
I was happy for her. And
as opposed to what we saw with the 4x1 men's relay.
Speaking of Carl
which
Lewis.
Was not. Yeah. Was Carl pissed. Had a few things to say. Oh, well, apparently, well, rumor has it that they never practiced together, which I don't
speaks
get.
Of arrogance.
Like, how does that happen?
Coaching. That's
you think it's an arrogant thing?
Well, in the standpoint of we don't need practice type of deal, like, all I got to do is show up. Not to say that was the athlete standpoint, because I'm sure that wasn't their standpoint, but for the sake of that's a coaching thing, man. It starts at the top, leadership. A lot of mm-hmm. obviously, we're not in those rooms. We're not in those coaching rooms. We don't know what's going on with the strategies that are put in place with the in which they run these relays. But the general consensus online was, especially from Track Nation, it wasn't the best order. It wasn't the most strategic order in which they ran the 4x1. But right. obviously, practice does help. Practice makes things perfect, and it looked like something that you saw from, I wouldn't even say it, let me not disrespect elementary athletes, but it looked really, really, really amateur, just the nature in which it happened, mm-hmm. especially when you consider it looked bad. But it's
and
a
even
learning
lesson. If guys got like Carl Lewis come out and kind of agree with that,
he was
like,
pissed.
You can't doubt that guy.
There's many things you can.
Did you see what Trayvon Bromell had tweeted?
Oh no! What did he say?
He was saying he was there at the Olympics injured. He was hurt. Uh-huh. He's running hurt. So I don't know what the extent of that was, but he was basically saying how bad he felt about being a disappointment and how he was injured. I don't know what the injury was per se, but he had tweeted that. So I mean, I definitely think that. I mean, it's 3 years till Paris.
Yeah, they got
Paris Olympics.
Better,
so that's going to be a story to watch to redeem. Like, you can't go, you can't do any worse than that.
That's embarrassing.
You know what I'm saying?
But still, they have to, that's going to be the footnote. Like, when they, you know how this year, when you saw all the replays and the little montages they showed to try to get you all hyped up and stuff, that's going to be in there. Over and over and over and over and over again, because women were taking care of business. It's just, man, they looked bad. But Carlos, you can say many things about him, including his singing capabilities, but you can't deny anything that he has to say about.
I was just about to say.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, to this. Just go ahead and head to YouTube and
Google,
type in.
Google.
Type
in YouTube, yeah.
Carl Lewis. Was it the National,
Carl Lewis,
national
Anthem? No, Stars. Was it? No, it was the National Anthem.
Was it the National Anthem?
Yeah.
Just, yeah. So.
Oh, say, can you see?
It wasn't as bad
and
as
the no Rockets.
What's
Ray Claire?
What's old girl name? Old girl during the NBA Finals.
Fergie. Fergie.
Those two moments. Nothing will top that second or that level of secondhand embarrassment for me. Like, that was it right there. That was it between.
And then they made the Fergie remix. So I made it to a song.
Oh my gosh!
Overall, man, what'd you think about the Olympics? You know, with COVID, and you know, there weren't fans there. There were just like the people that were already working the Olympics, or like the
teams
that were already there. But you could tell, like, the atmosphere was kind of different, right?
It was different, and obviously, we have to do the best thing, the most sensible thing to protect the athletes, and that's to ensure that no one is around to infect them or make things worse. Obviously, from a fan perspective, it was like, man, you can tell just the difference, especially when I was watching the triple jumpers. And, you know, sometimes the triple jumpers or just jumpers in general, they, you know, try to get the crowd involved and, you know, get them
they
clapping.
Feed off the energy. Yeah.
And it's like you can hear like all seven people clapping, and it's like it doesn't hit the same. It doesn't hit the same. Obviously, they still were performing at high levels, so it's a great thing that they were able to push through that. But at the same time, it's like knowing that the possibility of someone having their parents in the stands, or, you know, distant relatives that they haven't seen in a long time, or just even people who are returning to Tokyo since they were born and things like that, getting to see that hometown or home welcome, the home welcome.
Right.
Just to get that atmosphere would have been cool, but understandable. So we're in the middle of a pandemic, and they did their thing as far as protecting the athletes. So that's the only thing that matters. That's the only thing that matters. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. Shout out to NBC, bro, because I don't know how y'all are watching it, but me, there are particular times I wake up early, you know, to catch it. It's something I really wanted to watch, sprint relays and stuff like that. Like the app would give you a little notification. Obviously, that's really, you know, that's real. I guess it's the simple things that make me that pretty much I get excited about. And that was one of them.
That excite me the most.
Yeah. And then just being able to get the replay so easy. Like I remember in past years, you'd have to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. Like, oh, wait, I think the event's about to come on. Okay, there it is right there. But this one, you can just click at the bottom and says replay event. Or you can just look at the start list and then start list and show you like you can replay. But in terms of app and technology and user friendliness, NBC, the Olympic sport app, or whatever it was called, amazing. I'm gonna give y'all boys 5 stars. I'm gonna give y'all boys five stars. So it was dope. What about
speaking of 5 stars? You can give this podcast 5 stars on Apple and great rating so we can get our ears to the duo.
And if you don't get 5 fingers to the face, I'm playing. But what did you think overall? I mean, obviously it passes by in like a blink of an eye with like 2 weeks or so,
man,
but
it's really
like, did you get to something that you didn't expect that you were going to enjoy the most? Did you have one of those moments?
Yeah, I think for me, being able to, like, because I had never watched game to game. Like, I watched more different events, like, as far as the track and field. Mm-hmm. Like, I watched the shot put, the javelin. Yeah. I couldn't tell you who won off the top of my head, but just being able, like, it was the most interactive I've been following the different headlines, and you know, every morning waking up to, like, if I missed something, I could go back and watch it. I think technology has really helped this year. Like, they had to be on top of their A game this year because,
absolutely,
one, the fans weren't there, but two,
we were there, Deontay.
We're in 2021 now, so like you would think that they would have many different avenues to be able to enjoy the coverage. And I think for the most part, they did a great job. It's just that the time change or the time difference, obviously, is what is hard adjusting to. But I think for, you know, the 2024 Olympics in France,
a little bit easier.
I think, yeah, it'll be easier to, you know, follow along. I mean, there's still a little bit ahead of us, but for the most part, it's not as much as Japan. I think Japan was like a 14-hour difference. I don't think it's that much. But overall, man, I enjoyed the Olympics. 2028 is coming to U.S. and L.A.
That's going to be bananas, bro.
So that'll be interesting. It's going to be crazy. So, the overall coverage, cool. Hopefully USA track and field can bounce back on the men's side.
We'll see.
Women's side gonna continue to dominate. Man, it's gonna be, if Sha'Carri gets in there, I'm excited to see her, obviously. Then hopefully our boy Omar can get back to it. Like, it's gonna be a lot of fun, interesting storylines.
It's 3 years. It's 3 years. We don't have to wait 4 years.
Exactly.
It's 3 years.
Yeah.
And shout out to my boy Mike, aka Jam. Because you mentioned the speedster from Dallas, Texas. But I'd be a fool if I didn't say that we're preparing, but so are the Jamaicans, the motherland. We are also preparing. So Shout out to my boy Jam, trying to call out my dual citizenship, but he knows what it is.
He already know. Also, this weekend, Dane, there was the Hall of Fame game with your Cowboys. We don't have to talk about that if you want to. There was the Hall of Fame class of 2020 and 2021 enshrined because of COVID, and they had them both in the same weekend. Seems like Edgerrin James stole the show, man, with his speech. Did you get a chance to check it out? I actually missed it.
Yes, I did. So one of the most fascinating things there, this was a long time ago. There was this super long article about Edgerrin James and ESPN. Excuse me. I know I'll be able to find it. I should have linked it in the dealio, but I forgot. But it essentially told the story about basically how he became as strong as hell as he was, and just naturally how he didn't have to lift weights because of he used to pick watermelons as like basically to provide for his family when he was in high school. And one of the coolest things about it was just his dedication, basically from sun up to sun down, picking watermelons, making so much money. And I think they've got paid on, they got paid by how many trucks they filled up. And he would fill up so many trucks, and I apologize, I gotta find that article. But essentially, he got to work, didn't have a car, ended up buying a car after getting so much money, and of course, like driving home from a day's worth of work, essentially. But it just spoke to his work ethic and just where he came from and the story of him and perseverance. I said all that to say this. It's definitely a rags to riches story with Edgerrin James, but he, not only being one of the most patient and like really one of the most lethal pass catching running backs that we've ever seen, but he just always kept it real. You weren't going to get no fake robotic stuff from him. You, what you got is what you got. But the quote that stuck with me the most, or that resonated with me the most, being from the South where we're from, he said, you know, to believe it all started from, you know, basically a gold, I went from a gold grill to a gold jacket. It was like, that was like the chef's kiss. Like it was perfect. But the Hall of Fame bust, it was, his was phenomenal. It had the locks in there, and it was dope. It was dope. What about you, man? Did you have any particular sound bites that you got, or any particular moments that stuck out to you? I know you seen that Peyton Manning bust, the big ass forehead that gave my boy.
And what was really cool, I was watching a couple of clips on Twitter, and it was really cool to see with Peyton Manning, his dad was there for him.
Yeah,
which crazy. Which was great. But also he had his son there. Man. Peyton Manning had his son there signing autographs, and that got me to thinking. I'm like, man, we about to see this kid in like 15 years. he has two generations ahead of him. He has an uncle on the side of him that, you know, is going to be a Hall of Famer. It's just like, bro, Eli's going to be in the Hall of Fame, man.
This is a discussion for another day. It's a discussion
you don't
for
think
another.
So?
No, he's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. But did he have a Hall of Fame worthy career? Is the real question.
Oh, do we have any Giants fans that listen?
Plenty of Giants fans. Pitts is a Giants fan, isn't he?
No, that listened to the pod. I don't know if he listened.
Oh, he'll find. If we talk, they'll come out of the woodworks. Look at wherever they are. Whatever they are, they'll come out the woodworks defending their boy. They know it's, and it's not even my own thoughts as far as it being controversial that whether or not he's going to go in the Hall of Fame or not.
No,
it's
I've seen this argument already.
It's why. And it's valid points on both sides, but it just makes you wonder, like, what is the criteria itself is subjective in nature because it has to be, but it points to some really good things because every particular player that in our generation, we can point to every guy that's been in the Hall of Fame. Was he the best player in his particular position in a particular time? You can say, okay, I could see that. Yes. But for this guy, it's like,
right.
But it's the two Super Bowl rings. No one can take that from him. He made some of the most diabolical, death-defying throws
that
we've ever seen.
In every passing category. I'm sure he's shattered all the records. Yeah. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure he's done that. But yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely an argument that I've seen a lot on social media when people want to just get attention or engagement.
Oh, yeah.
But to go back to the both Hall of Fame classes, and I feel like I notice this every year, Dane, and even more with these two classes, is how old you and I are getting, because these are a lot of players we grew up watching. Class of 2020, we had Steve Atwater was kind of before our time.
He should have been in the
'80s,
freaking 90s. Hall of Fame, bro.
Yeah,
he should have been in the Hall of Fame. Like,
when you he should have been in
bad.
There.
My bad. That's your because that's
no,
your
I got
boy.
You
can talk about. But in terms of
hey,
look in terms of
the way he
skills,
played,
in terms of ball skills, like that's a ball hawk. When you go
ball
like,
hawk,
like.
Yeah. The Brian Dawkins that came after him, the Troy Polamalu's, like,
all him.
You know, now you can't play the way he played, but he would take receivers head across the middle without hesitation.
Yeah.
You got Steve Atwater, but guys like Isaac Bruce, Steve Hutchinson, Edgerrin James, and Polamalu in the class of 2020 were like, you know, players that we grew up watching,
man.
And with the 2021 class, Peyton Manning, John Lynch, Megatron, like, Calvin Johnson is a Hall of Famer, bro. And he was on the cover of Madden in like 13. And of course, you know, he had a lot of miles left in the tank when he decided to let it go.
Freaking Detroit.
Like, we're old.
Yeah, bro.
And to close out that list, Alan Faneca and Charles Woodson, like the guys we grew up watching the guys we grew up admiring or getting gold jackets. Yeah. And you know,
oh man,
Calvin Johnson was the second coming of Randy Moss. Like you could say that. And
absolutely.
He's in the Hall of Fame now. Like, it's kind of insane, like, when you, like, sit down and think about it, like...
Especially how Randy Moss got in the Hall of Fame not too long ago.
Right.
It's like, like, that's... I guess it can speak to the longevity of his career, because he also played with Tom Brady. But that also says something else, because how...
Tom Brady still winning Super Bowls at the age of 42. Oh, my goodness, man. Shout out to the Hall of Fame inductees, man. And Dane, I did get to catch a little bit of the Cowboys-Steelers game, the Hall of Fame game. You know, they cut down the preseason games from four to three, but you guys, the Cowboys and the Steelers, will end up playing four because Hall of Fame game as well.
Yeah.
Anything kind of catch your eye? You really didn't see a lot of starters play, but anything that caught your eye watching them?
For me, no. We had most of our starting linemen that were playing in that game. Those were guys that were starting last year. They were makeshift guys because our starting tackles were both out with season-ending injuries. So the guys that started in place of those guys, they played they played the other night, and it's like these guys were getting beat the hell up by the pass rush that the Steelers had. And obviously the Steelers are known for a great defense. So for me, at least, there wasn't any type of misunderstanding, but I was impressed by the level of consistency that they were bringing the pass rush from the Steelers. So I think the Steelers, they got in terms of depth, they're going to be fine. But for me, I was looking at number 11, Micah Parsons. Is well noted and, is well noted that I was not a fan of the pick. I didn't doubt his ability on the field. It was more so the things off the field that were kind of just like, hell no, like I'm not about that. I'm not for that. There's no place in the world for anything like that. You look up the details if you want to, just make sure you're not eating any food at the same time. But on the field, dude was wrecking havoc, and he was everywhere where the ball was at. So that was impressive for the most part. For me, that was the only thing I was looking at in terms of what the rookies looked like. And they were decent. Obviously, no one's going to get a gold jacket after their debut, their preseason debut. So let's stop making these stupid comparisons and these crazy arguments about how well somebody played. It's a preseason game. There are still 17 games that need to be played that are going to count. So I think it's just in terms of no one getting hurt, which was a plus, and then just getting to see some of these guys. And most importantly, we got football back, bro. So, you know, that's all I cared about. But
we got football, right?
We got football back, so.
I agree with you, man. Like, I think I was not more excited, but I was, like, definitely happy to see football on the screen. I remember calling my dad and telling him, we got football.
You're this closeted Cowboys fan. Get out of here.
No,
we don't need you.
Chill.
Shout out to Mr. Epps, probably on episode 43 right now.
Yeah, he'll get here eventually at the end of the season. But I was having a conversation with a friend about, he's a Cowboys fan, but something that I was like, oh, let me ask Dane this on the pod.
Oh, snap. Put me on the spot.
About Dak Prescott. Obviously, we weren't going to see him play in the Hall of Fame game, but, you know, there are reports that maybe his injury, or not injury, but maybe it's more to his arm or shoulder situation than the Cowboys are letting on.
Mm-hmm.
If he is not practicing soon, has he been practicing? Do you think it's more to the injury situation than the Cowboys are letting on?
Absolutely.
Or you think it's just a thing where they just did? Oh, okay.
Absolutely. We not even a year ago, Leighton Vander Esch. Oh, he's going to be out for, you know, day to day with a neck stinger. A few weeks later, boom, this man had to have neck surgery. Like, anybody who's had neck surgery or back surgery will tell you that's not a minor surgery. That's a big deal. So, yes, the Cowboys do have a history of downplaying injuries, much like a lot of other professional teams, which is despicable. But at the same time, they're just trying to save face, try not to let people panic. But at the same time, it's like, just be real. I think if you're honest with people, it plays out a little bit better in your favor. But obviously, Dak, you know, Bill Ford, tough head ass, he's gonna be all right. But I don't I don't think anything serious about it. And if there is, and it is what it is, the man's got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to lay upon while the team tanks and gets us a top five pick somehow. But I think he'll be fine. I think there were some rumors about him actually throwing to receivers today. Not in a formal practice sense, okay, but just like, you know, just tossing it around. But I don't know. There's a lot of speculation with that. There's always going to be speculation about that, specifically because of the Cowboys being involved with, I don't know, probably one of the more popular HBO projects that we've seen in the, you know, past couple of decades or so. So, you know, I don't know. It's a storyline, but that's what it is. It's for entertainment. So, you know.
Speaking of which, Dane, you mentioned my next thing.
Oh,
got to talk about the Hard Knocks show that the Cowboys are part of. Segway. Cowboys are going to be on Hard Knocks. I enjoy Hard Knocks just because the little storylines that they have, especially seeing those guys that are trying to make the team, you know, doing all they can to prepare.
Guys.
And
the cusp guys. Yeah.
And then it's always heartbreaking when they got, like we always talk about.
Your playbook?
Can you bring your playbook?
Bring your playbook? Coach would have talked to you. Damn.
Yeah, man. So this is the third time that the Cowboys will be a part of the show. They were the subject of the second season in 2002 and then in 2008. Anything? Well, let me ask you first. Do you plan on watching it?
Bro, I have an HBO subscription and I haven't tuned in. I haven't thought about tuning in. Living in Dallas itself is already a circus with the media and the Dallas Cowboys. So I think that's enough for me. But obviously, I check it out just to get to know a little bit more about players that I didn't know about. Because obviously, the storyline, I'm saying obviously a lot, obviously, but the storylines are pretty cool. One of the questions or one of the little sound bites I'm sure is going to get captured in the episode. One of the questions they asked was, is there a player on the team that you would absolutely not want your sister to date? And a lot of them were chiming in about it. And I think it's always funny because anybody who's played a team sport or just, you know, has hung around guys, you have those friends like, oh, hell no, I'd never let them date my sister just because of how they treat women or just the how they carry themselves and things like that. So that itself is funny as hell, but also just getting to see those undrafted rookie stories or just getting to see those on the cusp guys like make it, because to them, this is all they have. Some of those guys, this is all they have left. When you're talking about, and obviously it's not a 53 man roster anymore, but when you talk about 50 or 60 so spaces and you're fighting against the best of the best, the cream of the crop, to make it
in the not for long league.
Yeah. In a not average, what, 2 to 3 years, 2 to 3 years, if you're lucky. So it's like seeing that dream come to life for some of these guys is beyond words. So I'll tune in for that, but I'm not expecting anything from my boys, unfortunately. It's been well documented as well, but I'm just being a realist here.
I always enjoy like the different storylines and stuff. Like we mentioned, last year's was pretty interesting with the Los Angeles Rams and how they kind of dealt with COVID. You know, that was an interesting storyline and we're still dealing with it now. So it'll be interesting to kind of see that aspect and how they deal with it. But of course, you know, they're going to pick the stars, and what especially is going to be interesting to see how they talk about Dak. And you know, I just asked you about that injury and him bouncing back from that, and with the recent shoulder stuff, how they kind of, you know, cause to see how open they'll be about it. But
it's gonna be week 7,
and then of course to see that scrap they just have with the Rams. Yeah, that's gonna be fun to watch too.
I'm gonna come back to that. In week 7, in the middle of the third quarter, he gonna throw a pass like on the sideline. He gonna be wincing a little bit. They're gonna cut back in a little flashback in black and white, or montage of him like sitting on the sideline with an ice pack on his shoulder. I was like, come on, bro. They're gonna the storyline is gonna be ran through the dirt. We already know that. But getting back to what you were saying about the brawl, well, not the brawl, but the little skirmish.
Skirmish.
So I love team scrimmages, like when the NFL allows teams to have I love that because it not only validates what we think sometimes when we see in practice against, you know, certain receivers dominating, you know, certain corners or just a quarterback dominating.
You defense. Mean when DeAndre Hopkins took D'Angelo Hall's soul?
Bro, I feel God, boy. Bro, and put him out with I think it's Achilles injury. Put him out with
something. I mean, something. He was out of there. I don't know. And pride as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. he should. I mean, DeAndre don't be messing with nobody, bro. So for him to come at him like that, yeah, you deserved every bit of it. But anyways, we got to see a little bit, and from what I've, you know, I was hoping that we'd see a little bit more matchups with our eventual wide receiver number one, CeeDee Lamb and Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey, obviously the best cornerback in the NFL, arguably top two, maybe top three cornerback in the NFL. For me, number one cornerback in the NFL. But most importantly, the best player in the league to me, Aaron Donald. I wanted to see what, if they were even going to let him practice or, you know, participate because of,
yeah,
that's you don't risk for the sake of a freaking TV show. You don't risk putting your best player, the league's best player out there on the field, but they let him out there. So, you know, that was cool to see too. And then of course I was just surprised, like, for Connor Williams of all people to beat him in a rep. And obviously
you were just talking about him recently.
Yeah, like I was just talking about the dude recently. Like, I'm like, man, so used to seeing this dude. Like, it's not funny at all, but since he's been drafted, dude's been getting bullied, like, pretty much by, you know, everybody, getting put in the lap of the quarterbacks pretty much every game. Not every game, but consistently enough. But there isn't a soul that has completely extinguished Aaron Donald. He's an unblockable, fear-mongering night terror. This is exactly what he is. So when we see clips on Twitter about him, you know, not being able to, of course, obviously drop, like, there I go with that obviously again, him driving Connor Williams 5 yards into, you know, whatever invisible pocket that people are able to see, that's considered, on a lot of people's eyes, that's considered a win by the offensive lineman. But if you're thinking in terms of an actual game, a game time situation, anytime a defender drives a lineman 5 yards back, there, most of the time that's a sack, or it causes a pressure, bad throw, you know, strip sack, stuff like that. That's the case.
Something. Yeah.
So say what you want about that, but there's no denying what happened a few minutes later. Aaron Donald going, and this is a 11-on-11 situation. Aaron Donald is going up against Connor Williams, and I assume, just like any other time, Connor Williams is about to end up on his back. This was not the case. Somehow, I don't know, the hand of God himself was touching Connor Williams on the back, and he's able to, you know, hem up, you know, Aaron Donald for the time that the pass, or no, was it a run play? I think it was a run play. I can't remember. Whatever play design was, he's able to hold him off for a little while. And Aaron Donald didn't like that.
That could be said in the chat. Yeah.
Yeah, he did not like this. He was like, right in the face, and was holding him, you know, face mask. And then another unexpected turn, literally. Connor, you know, flipped the dude over. I'm like, you? Like, you do? Like, you know, like, not only did you pick a fight with Debo, but you made the first, well, actually, you countered the first hit, and you started what turned out to be a little bit of a scuffle. But obviously you don't like to see that, because it's, you know, me personally, somebody could get hurt, and it ruins the fun for everybody. Cause then now everybody's in their emotions and their feelings about this or that. But I think it was just it shouldn't have been taken that far, but at the same time, it's football and emotions flare, unfortunately. You got all these grown men in one place that ain't, you know, just got all this pent up rage for no reason sometimes.
Aggression.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
Hopefully we could see some action on that on Hard Knocks. Here's a plug for HBO. Hard Knocks is gonna air tonight, Tuesday, August 10th at 9:10 Eastern time. So if you want to check it out, it'll be five episodes running through TV September 7th. You know that. Now it's time for What's That Sound? Nerds! Nerdy news segment brought to you by our guy Keith. Keith, thank you for the music, my guy.
Shout out to Keith.
The Suicide Squad came out this past weekend. James Gunn directing it. Well known for, you know, his MCU take on the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler
alert.
Spoiler alert. I always forget the spoiler alert, man.
You good, man. That's what I'm here
thank
for,
you,
my
Dan.
Boy. Got you.
Thank you. Thank you. Suicide Squad, you know, the Suicide Squad, or excuse me, this is the Suicide Squad.
Right.
Previously, there was Suicide Squad back in 2016. This is kind of like a soft reboot of the movie with a little spin on it coming from James Gunn. And when you watch it, and I'll say my first impressions, I'll go to you. It reminded me of Guardians of the Galaxy, but a lot more blood and gore. And you could tell that it was a James Gunn kind of spin on it. I felt like there were, like, we've seen the DC as far as being more of a dark experience as far as the grit and not as humorous, but there was a lot of jokes in this one, a lot of humor. One thing I did like was there was a ton of action, which you could expect from the Suicide Squad, but spoiler alert again, the way it started was completely threw me off guard.
Unorthodox.
And what I liked about it, it was like a lot of characters that we didn't expect to go died really early. Man. And like from the jump, I'm like, oh, okay, stakes are high. Yeah, stakes are high and any character can be gone like that. But it just reminded me of like of a very violent Guardians of the Galaxy. Because when we first saw the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, it was more like misfits, right? Misfits coming from different parts, teaming up for a mission, right? And this is kind of like the same kind of deal. Obviously, these are villains or anti-heroes, so to speak, teaming up for, you know, the mission or whatever before they die. I mean, we've both been critical of DC movies so far.
Absolutely.
And I will say this. I enjoy this movie a lot. I will say it's the best DCEU movie so far.
Oh, it's a bold statement there.
I can't disagree with you.
After the first watch, I cannot disagree with you. But I'm going to, full disclosure, I have a tendency to overrate the hell out of movies when they first come out. Every time a movie come out, like, man, that's the best movie I've seen in a long time.
I agree.
2 weeks later, hey, man, that might be a top five action flick I've ever seen in my life. So I'm taking this with a grain of salt. But at the same time, I like the ragtag C team. I can't even say the B team. But these guys are the C team. The ragtag C team coming together to save the world type of deal. I loved it. I'm glad you gave me the warning about how gory it was, because I was telling me and the wife were supposed to watch it together. It didn't end up going that way because I know this is my homework assignment for the podcast. And I was like, hey, babe, I need to watch this. And she was like, well, just go ahead and watch. And I was like, are you sure? All right, cool. And then eventually when I started, because I didn't finish watching, so I got home from work today. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to watch this.
Yeah, man.
And this is somebody who works in the medical field. Like, she works in the medical field. So this stuff, like gory stuff like this is nothing. This is nothing to her. But.
But it's different, like when you see it in a movie,
I was like, dang, like when they got Pete Davidson, like off the rip, I was like, damn, turn that boy's face into meatloaf, bro. Like somebody took a bite out of some meatloaf. That's what it looked like. But yeah, I love the movie. The concept, it was dope. When, more importantly to me though, Harley Quinn was phenomenal. Like, what's her name? Was it Margaret? Margot Robbie. She. I don't know if she was born to play this role. I don't want to sell her short, you know, because she's a talented actor. But that's Harley Quinn. That is Harley Quinn. So she did it. She did the damn thing on that one. It was just kind of cool to see the power dynamic between the leads, though. Peacemaker?
That's what I was gonna say too. Bloodsport.
Like, you could kind of tell, like, eventually they were building up to something there, but I was like, nah, there's no way. But it made sense if they were going to have these two separate teams with two separate missions and not being aware of each other for them to be something else at play. So that was kind of cool, too. It was good. The villain itself, no, I can't even say it was a main villain. The side mission, my opinion, the big ass star, that was the side mission to me. To me, that was a side mission because it's just, you can't scare me with that.
You think it was too cheesy?
I think it was on par. It was definitely on brand. Yeah. It was on brand. It couldn't scare me, but just a threat of mind control in a sense, or having your body neurologically taken over, I guess it's scaring and deafening to somebody, but I was like, come on, bro. That's Patrick Starr.
But you know what? Ain't it funny like how it always comes back to the government being evil? Like, I feel like in a lot of movies, don't they always do that? It's always like the government behind it. Like,
it's the man.
The man holding us back. But going back to that dynamic, I think John Cena did well. His comedic timing was I didn't see him. I didn't see him.
Sorry, guys. I had to throw that corny joke in. I apologize. Can't see him.
But his comedic timing was great. Like, he was funny without being funny.
Keep going. Did you see Black John Cena?
Huh?
Did you see? There's a picture of this dude, and he looked like Black John Cena. He was trending.
No, I haven't seen it.
Well, after this podcast, go on your Twitter. Go ahead and keep talking. I'm going to send you the tweet. Don't look at it until after the podcast.
All right.
But and for those listening, go ahead and head over to Twitter. If you don't have Twitter, download it. It's probably the most fun app you'll have on your phone for a long time. But go ahead and hit to that search. The little
it is my favorite box. Social media app.
It is fun. And type in Black John Cena, and you're going to laugh your butt off. But go ahead, man. Take it away, Deontay. My bad. I had to point this out.
I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I was talking about his comedic timing. He was funny at parts where you wouldn't think would be funny.
Absolutely.
And then his dynamic with Bloodsport was pretty cool, too. He just did his job. Like, obviously, with any role like that he takes on, like, he's very versatile in what he can he can do. And him taking the leadership role of the Suicide Squad and eventually going through what he had to go through. I'm not going to go through every little detail, but overall, man, he was a great, you know, I guess you could say protagonist in this kind of anti-hero kind of dynamic. Trying to think of King Shark was King pretty Shark cool was, too, and Polka Dot Man.
Yeah, Polka Dot Man. They had to do Polka Dot Man like that. That's and when they first came.
That's
on
what the school, he wanted in the end, though.
Yeah, I knew nothing about the character. I knew the actor. The actor is a phenomenal actor, but I knew nothing about the character. So I was like, okay, what's his power? Then I found out, I was like, damn, interdimensional. You know, power. I was like, okay, what is the plot armor? What's going to be the issue? Because people like that shouldn't have, they should, and essentially he's an unlimited source of power, firepower. Based on, for those who don't know, he can shoot
polka dots that explode.
He can shoot exploding polka dots, interdimensional polka dots, whatever. So do with that information what you will. But I was like, how are they going to dumb this guy down, or how are they going to, you know, nerf the dude? And sure enough, he ended up getting stepped on and killed. I'm like, come on, bro. Like, so yeah, but it speaks a lot. One of the cool things about it, it not only speaks to some of these lesser known heroes or anti-heroes, but it speaks to the level of, it shows us what the role that trauma does to all of us, even superheroes. Not only the traumatic situations have a place in your Supermans and your Batmans of the world, but they also have a place with your villains. Sometimes your villain is just a bad family situation. You know, one too many family situations gone bad. And obviously there's no reason to, you know, do bad things in the world as a comic book villain, but it adds another layer to their motives as well as their motivation. That's the same thing. Dumb man. Okay. It adds an additional layer to their motives in their backstory. So it was just kind of cool to see how that played a role in pretty much everybody. So.
Also, Viola Davis playing Amanda Waller again, like she did in the 2016 version. Amazing job. I mean, obviously another great, you know, performer and actress. Every role she takes, she embodies it. Like, you know, Amanda Waller is known as a character that
she makes you hate her.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah,
she embodied the character just like she did in 2016. And overall, man, I feel like I give this movie an 8.5 out of 10. It was my I'll backtrack on the best one, but it was my favorite DCEU movie that I've seen. Of course, when Batman and Superman came out, I actually enjoyed it because it was Batman and Superman, like the two
name brand
most
heroes.
Common name brand and on the same screen. Like, we've never seen that before.
It's Kellogg's and Tricks for Kids. It's essentially what you see.
Yeah, Frosted Flakes, all that. You know what I'm saying?
We got the off-brand version of supervillains in this one. So this
and Frosted O's, you know, James Gunn putting his MCU kind of imprint on it. You could kind of see how, like, it reminded me, I don't know about you, it reminded me so much of Guardians of the Galaxy, which I didn't know much about before watching it. And like, I didn't even think I was going to enjoy both movies, or after the, or before the first Guardians of the Galaxy, I didn't think I was going to enjoy it, but it was a great, one of the best MCU movies. But overall, Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad was great. Any last thoughts on it, bro?
I'm curious to see what they're going to do, because there has to be some sort of sequel based on what we got from the post-credit scenes, both of them. One of them, not so much important, but the second one, definitely important. To me, at least.
Yes, yeah, so they're going to have a Peacemaker series on HBO Max with John Cena.
I did not know this, but that's good to know.
So
I like staying in the dark about some stuff.
That
kind of
goes in with that post-credit. Definitely good in nowadays because of everything that you can see. But yeah, they're going to do a Peacemaker series. I don't know if James, I think James Gunn is directing that, but I'm not positive. But yeah.
I don't know.
So that'd be interesting to see what they go along with or that. But check out The Suicide Squad if you haven't already.
Pretty good.
But to the MCU, Marvel Studios, Dane, we've talked about it over the past few episodes. Marvel Studios' first animation Disney Plus show, What If, drops this Wednesday with the first episode. And I think the first episode will be Captain Carter.
Okay.
Talking about if Agent Carter, Peggy Carter, got the super soldier serum instead of Steve Rogers. So it's going to be fun. I think the episodes are like 30 minutes each, which doesn't surprise me. I didn't expect like 14
episodes. Minutes.
But yeah, kind of like it was with WandaVision, because it's going to be nine. Yeah, it's going to be 9 episodes. But one question I think we've kind of talked about a lot is, will each episode connect more? One of the questions we're talking about, if it connected to the larger MCU that we know.
I think it will.
I want to know if I wonder if it's going to connect to each other. Like, will these be separate stories, each episode, different what ifs, or like, will the what if episodes connect? So, for example, like, whatever happens in the first What If episode with Peggy Carter, will it connect to what happens to episode 2, which we think is going to be T'Challa becoming Star-Lord kind of thing, or will they all be separate? Anything you kind of expecting, or what do you think will happen in these 9 episodes?
I have no expectations. I think the sky is the limit. It's going to be a very emotional trip, not only for myself, but for many others out there as Chadwick Boseman fans. But
yes,
I think this is going to be pretty cool. I completely forgot about, I obviously forgot about the project months ago, until of course they dropped that nice little well put together trailer for us. So we're going to see. I think it'll be connected.
Yeah,
it has to be. There has to be. This is, I'm sure they put a lot.
Just think, like, everything is connected at this point.
Yeah, bro. Like, it's, yeah. I don't know. But we'll find out. I'm excited about it. I have the episode down. I wake up in the middle of the night, download it before I have to go to work Wednesday, so I can watch it sometime during my workday somehow.
Yep. Got What If coming this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Got less than a month away from Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings.
We still ain't got no Spider-Man.
We have. Yeah, at this point, bro, I've tuned that out of my head so much that I'm okay. Like, it's not bothering me as much as it did before.
It bothers the hell out of me.
You mad, huh?
I'm not mad. I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. This is why everything needs to stay in house. That's why we need to get all of our rights back.
Wouldn't it be cool though, like, to not get a trailer at all and just go into Spider-Man Far From Home not knowing what's gonna go down? No, Dane's not amused, guys. He's looking at me with stale face. Dane does not like that idea. Scrap it.
So you mean to tell me you want to have no idea what restaurant you're going to? You show up, they bring out your food, and it's a whole plate of unseasoned garbage. All because you didn't want to go let me finish my point. All because you wanted to just be excited by the presentation when you get there. No. I'm going to look on the website. I'm going to the reviews. I need to see what I'm getting myself into, because I'd be damned if I waste my hard-earned money on some garbage.
So you think Marvel Studios and Sony are going to give us unseasoned garbage for Spider-Man?
I want to avoid unseasoned garbage. Not to say that they put out anything like that, but let's not be naive here. They have a reputation for excellence. Why stop now? Why disrupt the formula now? So it just looks funny in the light. And I say this right now, and then sometime next week we're going to get a trailer. I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know why I doubted y'all, man. I'm sorry. I apologize. You know.
Come back for forgiveness on the next episode.
Yeah, exactly. Begging for and I refuse to let you go.
We got that coming in December. Got Eternals in November. We got Hawkeye in November as well. The show. Hawkeye series. Yeah, Hawkeye. The series.
I mess with you, man.
Oh.
It's a joke.
Don't question me.
Okay.
But like we always say, Marvel content continuing to bless us after the 2020 Marvel list year. But yeah, man. Episode 57 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. We're going to say rest in peace to Bobby Bowden. Legendary coach, passed away at the age of 91. Man.
Lived a long life, man.
Long and successful life. He had...
too many to count. Looking for it.
Yeah, I was looking for how many players or how many championships he won.
A legacy of excellence, essentially. A lot of your favorite players, which you have today, or some of, well, maybe speaking to the older generation, but a lot of your favorite players are much, 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 much appreciative, which you need to be much appreciative of this man and what he's able to do, the vision that he had. And I'm sure that's going to live on. I'm definitely sure how strong the Seminoles Nation is. I think that legacy will certainly live on.
Yep. He led them to 28 consecutive bowl appearances and national championships in 93 and 1999 for 14 straight seasons ending in 2000. The Seminoles won at least 10 games and finished ranked in the top five of the AP poll. Like when you think of Florida State, I mean, his name is synonymous with Florida State and what, you know, what the program was back in the day, like in the 90s, legendary. Of course. Like when that comes to mind, like Florida State comes to mind, it's like Bobby Bowden, like who else, or like no other person that you can attribute that to when you think of Florida State. So rest in peace to him, prayers to him and his family. And, you know, there were a lot of quotes going around from a lot of people, like you said, Dane, that, you know, were a part of him at either as a coach or as a player under him. Mm-hmm. I know I saw Deion speak about him. But man, he lived a long and, you know, prosperous, successful life, man. And yeah, Deion said, God bless the Bowden family, friends, and loved ones. My prayers are with you. I've lost one of the best coaches I've ever had. And, you know, he had a lot of his technique was, or who he was a person of faith. And, you know, a lot of times in this day and age, we kind of don't see that from not even just coaches, but people in leadership positions.
Absolutely.
In living general. So, right. Like outwardly, like not hiding it. So hopefully we can continue, or we can see more of that going forward. People not afraid to be who they are, whether it's Christianity or just being a good person in general, man. So rest in peace to Coach Bobby Bowden, man. We sad one there for sure. But anything you want to say, my guy, before we get out of here?
Drink water. Get yourself some shades. And
yeah, it's getting hot.
Drive safe, man. Here's the thing. I don't know what it is. We're gonna see some qualitative research in a few years about the conditions of the pandemic and how that affected people's ability or lack thereof of driving. But man, drive safe, bro. You are literally in a few thousand pound weapons. Literally what cars are. They're the 1,000-pound weapons. And what you choose to do with them, whether it's for safety or for danger, that's up to you. But they have lifelong consequences. So, man, drive safe wherever you decide to do or however you decide to do it. Just make sure you're driving safe and be considerate of those on the road with you, because life is way too short, especially when you got bozos out here driving crazy and stuff. So that's all I got. That's all I got to say. I'm hopping off my soapbox.
He hops off. Episode 57 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. I just want to say thank you again. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, if you've been rocking with us since episode 0.5, episode 1, episode 2, we really appreciate it. I've been speaking to friends recently that, you know, really giving Dane and I a lot of compliments about what we've done so far. And honestly, we could just say thank you, man, just because we decided to do this. It was just two guys getting in front of microphones and hitting the record button. But to hear that, you know, there's been a change with us. We've gotten better with each progressive episode.
He said, yeah, y'all boys suck, bro. I couldn't bear it. Episodes 1 through 8. Woo! Man, yeah. That was rough.
Yeah. We appreciate it so much. And we appreciate y'all rocking with us. If you don't mind, if you haven't already, give us that 5-star on Apple. Great review as well. Tell your friends, tell your family. On YouTube as well, like and subscribe to the podcast so we can get our, you know, our pod to more people to listen and watch us, man. But other than that, episode 57 of the Duo, we out.